Off the ball.
GAA. Ah, honestly, I wouldn't have put Mark as the manager type. Now, Mark's been extremely, he's always been an extremely smart player, but in terms of that management role, I possibly would have seen him as a coach.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. Off the Balls Football Daily.
Hello and welcome along to Thursday's Football Daily. I'm Phil Egan. Coming up today, Aston Villa win their first trophy for 30 years and their first piece of European silverware since 1982. Goals from Yuri Tielemans, Emi Buendia and Morgan Rogers prove the difference against Bundesliga side Freiburg. And Spygate rumbles on as Southampton lose their appeal against expulsion. But first up, Unai Emery says Aston Villa's Europa League win is just the start of success at the club. They beat Freiburg 3-0 in Istanbul last night to end a 30-year wait for a trophy. It was Emery's fifth time winning the Europa League as a manager. He says he won't stop pushing for more glory.
We are enjoying each moment and we are working hard to achieve improves. And to get this trophy is one strong step forward we are doing.
Emi Buendia has been at the club since 2021. He said he's proud of how the team has grown.
Playing Europe three seasons in a row, so I think the campaign we did this season in Europa League, it was fantastic. All the credit for everyone in the team.
Villa striker Ollie Watkins says it feels incredible to have won the Europa League with the club.
Come to support me today and they were playing in, you know, reserve matches with me when I was at Exeter, and to come from that far and so many highs and lows, you know, for this season personally, I started the season off poorly, and to see where I finished it and to see what we've done. So yeah, incredible, incredible.
Villa right back Matty Cash said he had a beer with Villa fan Prince William after the match.
He's just delighted, yeah. To be fair, he's such a big supporter. He's always coming to the training ground. He's always at Villa Park. And yeah, he deserves moments like these. And hopefully today he can let his hair down tonight.
On last night's Off the Ball, OTB's resident Aston Villa superfan Michael McCarthy joined Owen Sheehan and Owen Doyle on the football show in the immediate aftermath and described the journey that Villa fan base has been on.
I don't know. I feel like I'm on national radio now making too big a deal of this, but you know. It is what it is. It's Villa haven't won a trophy since 1996. They haven't been in a European final in my lifetime. And I suppose I've been thinking a lot today about the fact that they were hurtling towards relegation under Steven Gerrard, and Unai Emery came in and had qualified them for Europe that year. And now 4 years on, they're about to win the Europa League and qualify for their second Champions League in 4 years. It's kind of mad. It's kind of hard to get your head around. It's kind of hard to get your head around that this is, the majority is still Dean Smith's squad. They weren't able to strengthen in the summer, so they brought back like Emi Buendia, who was on a loan spell, a failed loan spell at Leverkusen, who they kind of couldn't get rid of in the summer. And then he's had basically won them the semi-final and the final and had a brilliant overall season. Like, the whole thing is just a little bit mad. I have to be honest. This team's been a bit of a journey, and it started in the Championship in some ways. I know there's been a lot of turnover with McGinn and Mings are still there, but we were talking about it on Off the Wall Breakfast this morning about how the club just kind of got revitalized when Dean Smith took over in the Championship, and it had been dead for 10 years, you know, or for 5-6 years anyway. And ever since then, like, the atmosphere around Villa Park and the feeling around them. And I just got to the stage where I'm watching them every week, which I don't know if I'd ever done. Maybe the year they nearly got relegated, the year before they did get relegated out of desperation, but out of love now, watching them every week. So it's a different thing completely. It's just, it's I don't know if it's the best team, but it's the most likable team.
It's all over. You are Europa League champions, Aston Villa fans. Congratulations. Unai Emery has got a fifth Europa League trophy to his name, which is rather incredible. And as Mick has just been explaining there, a first major trophy for Aston Villa in 30 years, a first European trophy since 1982. And that means a first Super Cup appearance since 1983, Mick. That's the big reason why you should be happy tonight.
Wow. Oh, yeah, yeah. That could. That's a big rematch either way. That's Villa PSG revenge for last year.
Correct.
Villa Arsenal, the hated rivals of English football at the moment.
The English FA is investigating Southampton's conduct after the club admitted to spying on three other Championship sides this season. The Saints have been expelled from the Championship playoffs. They've also lost their appeal against the punishment. It means Middlesbrough will play Hull on Saturday in the final at Wembley. The EFL, which brought the charges against Southampton, can only take action against its member clubs. But the FA are now looking into the matter, and the individuals involved could face charges and potential bans. Southampton also say they've started to refund their fans. At the 2024 Olympics, Canada's women's team were found guilty of spying on New Zealand. FIFA banned three members of staff, including their manager Bev Priestman, from football for a year. Meanwhile, Hull will consider pursuing legal action if they lose the playoff final on Saturday. The Hull owner, Adrian Ilekela, said he's frustrated by how much their preparations have been disrupted.
For 8 days, we have been prepared for Southampton. Wednesdays, we always give off to boys. Then it comes to Thursday, and Friday you cannot train. So maybe one day preparation, a full training. We reserve our legal rights about the situation, and we agreed to reserve our rights for the future.
Senior sports reporter for The Athletic, Matt Slater, joined Adrian Barry and Enda Call on this morning's Off the Ball Breakfast. He pondered if it was the right course of legal action to be taken by the governing body.
And just this idea that this seems excessive. But then because I've been sort of across this for a couple of weeks, I totally understand Borough's position, which they put in a written submission. And I also understand the EFL's stance. We have a rule book. We changed our rule book post Marcelo Bielsa's Spygate back in 2019, where he was caught spying on Derby County and then admitted, totally fessed up, I do it all the time. He gave a remarkable, one of the most famous press conferences of all time, where he basically detailed everything he'd learned from his missions, and it was just box office. So they changed the rules after that. So at that time, all the EFL could do Bielsa for was not acting with good faith to your opponents. Very airy-fairy, very vague, a real catch-all, you know, the way rules are written, very, very broadly written to sort of cover a whole multitude of sins. And there was nothing specific in there about the offence. So they tightened the rule book up and they brought this new rule in to say, you cannot do this within 72 hours of a game unless you were invited. So, i.e., basically never. So that's the rule. We've had the rule since 2019. It was quite interesting. I do think Bielsa was quite leniently dealt with as well. I think even at the time, and there were no subsequent charges from the FA. The FA could have gone after him, I think, on disrepute, but they didn't, right? So that was the end of it. It was 200,000 fine, and everyone was warned not to do it again. The rules changed, right? The rules have changed. So Southampton broke a rule. And all the arguments about did we gain an advantage, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, well, why were you doing it then? Because it was not like it was round the corner. You've admitted, because we've got evidence, that you did it before an Oxford United game over Christmas or just after Christmas. You did it against Ipswich, absolutely crucial game. And now we've got you doing it in front of this biggest game of the season. If you didn't think it mattered, why were you doing it? Right. So there's clearly a sporting advantage. And we haven't seen the written reasons yet, but a lot of the testimony is kind of leaking out. And I think there's quite a telling bit where Eckert was asked, would you like it if someone spied on you? And he said no. Why? Because they'd gain an advantage.
Remember, you can listen to Off the Ball Breakfast each and every morning from 7:30 on the Go Loud app and also on YouTube. If you want to hear any of this morning's show back, you'll find it in your OTB Breakfast podcast feed. Former Hearts and Hibs defender Alan Mabry joined Owen and Owen Doyle on the football show last night, and he believes it's only the start of this Hearts title push.
I find it hard to see with the financial power of them two that even Tony Bloom's model would be able to get close to them.
I'd probably be of the same belief as you, but then I was listening to a podcast earlier, Henry Winter, Christian Perslow, and speaking about Jameson Analytics and Tony Bloom, and this is basically the start of it. Guy James Anderson that puts money into Hearts every year. I think there was four or five boys that have come in through this system, but this is like the touch of the iceberg for them. You know, they now start, you know, they get better at it, they integrate them better. And you know, they've shown in Belgian league where they took Union St. Gallen from the second division to win it. And I know it's different. But they kind of feel, from a business point of view and an analytics point of view, that they're going to use this to close the gap kind of budget-wise. And they're kind of here to stay unless Tony Bloom decides he's going to do something else. But they're working on probability and, you know, they're currently looking at a boy in the fourth division in Germany who plays for the B team. Childers Braga came from second division in Norway. They're finding these gems, one to sell on, but two also to improve the team. So I do think it was, you know, such an opportunity this year that was missed. But other people, wiser than me, think from a business point of view and a kind of model point of view, this could be the start of something, and it's what Scottish football needs.
Meanwhile, on this week's episode of The Green Scene, Matthew Brennan, Ben Symes and David Wilson pondered who they would have preferred to win the Scottish title.
Who did you want to win on Saturday?
Hearts. Look, Celtic, great club, and unbelievable the way they've come back as well, but like, it's just not great long term when they've been such a basket case of a club all season and they still win the league. I think just being better for football, like football, you love football for different stories and different teams winning the league. Like Bayern Munich winning the league every single year in Germany is just not good. Inter winning, or Juventus winning the league in Serie A all those years in a row, it's just not good for football. You just want to see someone different win it. Like, that's why, like, if it was Hearts, if it was Aberdeen, if it was St Mirren, if it was any of them, it would have felt the same.
No, look, I was happy enough to see Celtic win it. I wouldn't have been anyway devastated if Hearts won it, of course, for Scottish football. Look, it's easy to say for Scottish football it would be great for Hearts to go and win the league, yes. It's also been great for Scottish football that Hearts have even gotten to the point where they could have won the league, and that's not going to be lost. I mean, people are going to have an interest in the early part of the Scottish Premiership next year, if nothing else. They're going to have an interest to see how are Hearts getting on, who are they going to sign during the summer, are Celtic going to react, are Rangers going to react. There's still storylines to follow there. So I think ultimately Hearts not winning the league, of course, is not good for them, and it's not great for Scottish football in the same way that Rangers and Celtic winning it all the time, and Celtic winning it all the time, is a monopoly on something is never really bad. Positive as a product. At the same time, I don't particularly, you know, care too much about the state of Scottish football. Like, I want to see entertaining stuff, and it was entertaining regardless of the outcome at the weekend. And Celtic happened to win, and I know a lot of people who support Celtic, so I was happy to see them happy.
And to listen to all things Irish football, you can catch The Green Scene each and every week in your OTB football podcast feed and on YouTube. PSG's Ousmane Dembele has insisted he'll be fit in time for the Champions League final against Arsenal. The Ballon d'Or winner limped off during their last league game of the season last weekend. The final takes place in Budapest on Saturday week. UEFA has announced plans to introduce a Champions League style format for international football in Europe in time for the 2030 World Cup. The 36th highest ranked countries will be split into three groups of 12 in League A and will be drawn to play six of those teams, similar to the Swiss system which was introduced to the new league phase of the Champions League last season. League B will feature three groups of six, or two of six and one of seven, depending on the number of competing nations. The format would keep the highest and lowest ranked teams apart, and therefore in theory prevent too many one-sided qualifiers. Under that format as well, Ireland, who are currently in League B of the Nations League, will be placed in the top 36 team league for the purposes of the 2030 qualifiers. And DR Congo have cancelled their pre-World Cup training camp in the capital, Kinshasa, due to the Ebola outbreak in the country. The World Health Organization has called it a public health emergency of international concern, with 139 suspected deaths and over 600 cases due to the disease. The camp has been moved to Belgium, where they're due to play Denmark on the 3rd of June, and there's a further pre-tournament fixture in Spain on the 9th. DR Congo's opening game of the World Cup is on the 17th of June against Portugal in Houston. That's 28 days away. They play in Guadalajara against Colombia on the 23rd of June, and then face Uzbekistan in Atlanta on the 27th. That's about all we have time for in today's Football Daily. I'm Phil Egan. I'll be back with more tomorrow.
To unlock much more from the OTB football feed, sign up at offtheball.com/join now.